Welcome everybody to the continuation of this series on Gita. So far we've covered the philosophy of the first 16 chapters, and tonight we'll talk about the highlights of the 17th chapter. At the end of the 16th chapter, Sri Krishna says, Yah shastravidhi mutsrijya vartate kamakarat nasa siddhima vapnoti na sukham na parangatim. He says that there's something called shastras. You say Vedas, shastras, it means our divine scriptures which hold the knowledge of dharma. I explained to you yesterday that dharma gives us the guidelines by which we're supposed to live, and if we do follow those guidelines, we become successful both in a material sense and a spiritual sense. And if we don't follow those guidelines of dharma, then we cause ourselves misery. So these shastras are there for our own good, and we're meant to learn from them and follow them. Here Sri Krishna says, the one who ignores the teachings of these scriptures and vartate kamakarata, he just does whatever he wants according to his own mind, well, nasiddhim, he doesn't attain anything worthwhile in this world, he doesn't attain perfection, he's not successful. Nasukham, he doesn't find happiness. Naparamgatim, and he doesn't reach his ultimate goal, because only by following the scriptures can we attain any of these things. That was the end of the 16th chapter. So in the beginning of the 17th chapter, Arjuna thinks of a question. That there are so many people who ignore the teachings of the scriptures and do something with full faith. What happens to them? Ye shastra vidhi mutsrijya yajante shraddhayanvitah. They do some kind of worship, Arjuna says, but ignoring what the scriptures teach us. Yet they're doing it shraddhayanvitah. They're doing it with full faith. So what kind of outcome do they receive from that? Normally in this world, I hear people say that, oh, just have faith in what you're doing. If you have faith, you'll get the right result. But this is not how Sri Krishna answers the question. Trividham bhavati shraddha dehinam sasvabhavaja sattviki rajasi chaiva tamasi cheti tam shrinu. He says there are three types of faith which different people have depending on their swabhava, depending on the nature of their own mind. He calls it sattvic faith, rajas faith, and tamas faith. We keep hearing about these three gunas of maya in every chapter, at least the most recent chapters that we've been studying. Sattvic means good, rajas is not good but not evil, it's in between, and then tamas means bad. So how can you have three kinds of faith? Well, it depends on the thing you're having faith in and the reason why you're having faith in it. Some people say faith is faith. Well, it's true, faith is, you can say it's a quality of your mind, the joining quality of your mind. But what you're going to get because of that faith depends on what you're having faith in and why you're having faith in it. Sri Krishna makes a very important statement in the next shloka here in the 17th chapter. Sattvanurupa sarvasya shraddhaya bhavati bharata shraddha mayoyam purusho yoyat shraddha sa evasa. He says, literally what he says is, a person becomes that which they have faith in. Now, it doesn't literally mean that, but the principle behind it is very important to understand. Shraddha mayoyam purusha. It means whatever you have faith in, you're joining your mind to that thing. So you have your mind and there's the thing you have faith in. What is the faith? It's the joining factor of the mind. The mind has the ability to have faith in something. So whatever you have faith to, or whatever you have faith in, you're joining your mind to that, and the faith is the mechanism through which you join. Now you're linked. The thing you have faith in and your mind, they're linked by your faith. So, what are you going to get from that faith? It depends on the thing that you have faith in. Because whatever you joined your mind to, now you're going to start receiving those qualities of that thing, that person, that path, that religion. The faith cannot change the quality of the thing that you're having faith in. That's a key. It means if you have faith in the wrong thing, you'll achieve the wrong thing. Just because your faith is solid, your faith is sincere, well, it doesn't make sense to think that by having sincere faith in a wrong thing, you'll get a right result. Why would that be true in the spiritual field when nobody thinks that in the material field? Nobody believes that if they've got a piece of brass, if they have faith in it, they just have full faith and take that brass to the jeweler and have full faith that he's going to pay you what he would pay for gold of the same weight. Doesn't matter if you had sincere faith or not, you'll get the value of that brass. You won't get the value of gold. Maybe you have a family heirloom that's been passed down from generation to generation in your family, and it's come to you, maybe some necklace with a gold and diamonds in it, and you think it must be worth about $50,000. It's an heirloom, you're not going to sell it, but you just think, if I ever get into financial difficulty, instead of losing my house, I'll just sell this instead. So one day such troubles come for you, you find yourself unable to pay your mortgage and you decide, let me take my gold and diamond necklace down to the jeweler. So you walk in and you show it to him and he says, I'll give you $50 for this. And you said, but it's gold and diamond. He says, no, it's fake gold and it's cubic zirconia. There's no gold or diamond in the whole thing. It's just costume jewelry. Say, I don't believe you. Take it to another jeweler. Tells you the same thing. I'll give you $45. Take it to another jeweler. I'll give you $55. So then you realize, I had faith in this and my family had faith in this for generations, but your faith couldn't turn that piece of cubic zirconia into a diamond. So we get the result of the actual value of the thing. We don't get the result of our having great faith in it. So in other words, if you have correct faith in the wrong thing, you get a wrong result in the material world and in spiritual matters as well. If you have correct faith in the right thing, you get a right result. And if you don't have faith in the right thing, again, you lose. Let's say you found, you were out walking in the forest on some path, and again you found some piece of jewelry, maybe a diamond ring. You looked at it and you thought, who would be foolish enough to leave this lying around here? It must just be costume jewelry. And you toss it to the side. Then your neighbor happened to be walking the same path later that day. A couple days later, you meet him and he's got a new car in his yard, a new Mercedes Benz. And you're thinking, oh, yesterday you were driving an old Honda? Why are you driving a Mercedes today? Well, you know, I was walking in the forest and I found a ring. So I picked it up, I took it to the jeweler, he said it was a blue diamond, I got $1 million for it. I moved, by the way, I'm moving too. I'm selling this little house, I'm going to get a big mansion somewhere. So, you found the right thing, but you didn't have faith in it, so you didn't get the result of that thing. So it's kind of tricky. You have to have correct faith in the correct thing. In the spiritual field, if we have wrong faith, meaning shaky faith, or we don't believe in the right thing, then we're not going to take advantage of it. And if we have right faith in the wrong thing, we can spend our whole life practicing something, believing we're going to get a certain result, and then not get that result in the end. A good principle to follow is you don't attain anything in death that you haven't attained in life. It's a good principle to follow if you want to avoid being fooled. There are this is Kaliyug, okay? In Kaliyug, there are all kinds of fictitious paths being made up in the name of religion, in the name of God, in the name of spirituality. It's just normal in Kaliyug that this happens. And there are many, many people following these paths. Now, our scriptures give us guidelines. What is the correct path? What should you be looking for in terms of gauging your progress on this path? But nowadays, people have like a kind of hope to just get something easy without doing much work. So if someone tells us, oh here, become my disciple, I'm giving you this mantra, you just keep repeating this mantra, and this will guarantee your entrance to the divine abode after you die. You'll go to Vaikunth abode. Just keep repeating this mantra. That's it. Then no need of Guruji for the whole rest of your life now. You got the mantra from him. And he's going to meet you at the gates of Vaikunth and ensure your entrance. Whereas the actual philosophy is, the moment you become God realized, you see God right then and there, and that happens in life. So if someone has not received the divine vision of God in your life before you die, you're not going to the divine abode after death. You're being reborn here in this world according to your attachments. Wherever you're attached, you'll be reborn in that field. So if you understand these kind of basic principles, you won't get fooled as easily. We shouldn't look for a shortcut or a loophole. We should always look for the real thing, even if it means we have to work hard at it. Sometimes people think, oh yeah, all I have to do is put a tilak on, because if you wear this tilak, Yamraj can't come near you. So when you die, he sees, oh, this tilak means he's a devotee of Shri Krishna. I won't go near him. And you get to go to the divine abode just by wearing a tilak. Again, there's no attaining anything after death that you haven't attained in life. So it doesn't matter if I'm wearing a tilak or not. If I haven't followed the proper path which purifies my heart, and then I become surrendered to God, receive His grace, get divine mind, divine senses, and become God-realized. If that hasn't happened before I die, then I'll be reborn in this world. Some people believe if you are in a certain place when you die, you'll go to the divine world. You'll get liberation. People think if you die in Kashi, you'll get liberation. Kabir Das said, I'm going out of Kashi on purpose. He lived in Kashi. He said, to show the people this kind of foolishness, what kind of foolishness people believe in, I'm going out of Kashi when it's my time to die. And I'll still go to the divine world. Doesn't matter where you die. It matters what's in your mind at the time of death. And if we haven't attained God in life, then what's in our mind? Our worldly attachments, and we're reborn accordingly. Some people think if you just say God's name, before you die. You'll go to the divine world. Again, our last word happens when we lose consciousness. At that time, we're still not dead, but we can't speak anymore. You lose consciousness, then your breathing stops, your heart stops, the doctor may pronounce you dead, and sometime after that, you actually leave your body, meaning the soul leaves the body. So at that time that the soul leaves the body, what is our mind thinking? Well, it's only active on a very subtle level, and it's going to be actively remembering whatever it's attached to again. So it doesn't matter if with your last word you said Ram's name or Shyam's name, because if you haven't attained them, you won't be able to remember them when your soul leaves your body, which is the actual moment of truth, so to speak. So there's no shortcuts or loopholes. Sri Krishna has told us at so many places in the Gita, things like Ma meva ye prapadyante maya metam tarantite. Only by surrendering to me can someone cross this maya. And if you cross maya, you're free from rebirth and you reach God. How do you become surrendered to him? He says there's only one way. Bhakti. Bhaktyatmananyaya shakya ahamevam vidhorjuna. Says, I'm only attainable through bhakti. Naham vedair na tapasan na danena na chejaya. He says, I'm not attainable through good actions. I'm not attainable through even charity or ritual observances. I'm not attainable by study of the scriptures, because that's an intellectual pursuit. I'm attainable through bhakti, which means the process of attaching your mind to God, which I've been explaining throughout this week. Attachment and surrender mean the same thing. So if you attach your mind to Krishna, you're becoming surrendered. That process is called bhakti. I think we'll have to leave the door open. It's getting a little muggy in here. Thank you. So faith is important and it's necessary, but it has to be in the right thing. Many, many people I meet believe that all I have to do is be a good person and I'll go to the divine world after I die. I'll go and be with God. But is this what the Gita says? No. Gita says that good actions result in going to Swarga. And Swarga is also under Maya. It's a temporary abode where souls can go temporarily and enjoy some higher mayic pleasures. There's nothing divine there in Swarga, and you have to come back here and be born again, even after going to Swarga. So how do you reach God? You have to surrender to Him. See, it's possible to do good actions without being surrendered to God. So someone may spend their whole life believing, all I have to do is be a good person and I'll go to God. Yet, that's against the teachings of the Vedas. Punyena punyalokam nayati. It's against the teachings of the Gita. So if we believe it wholeheartedly, it won't change the outcome. The outcome will be, if we were a good person, we'll be reborn in this world with a better destiny, more well-being in our next life. That's it. We'll definitely be reborn, however. So my point is that it's very important to understand what is the correct path and have faith in that path. There are people in the world who believe wholeheartedly that I can go ahead and harm this person or these people, but because I'm doing it for my religion, I'll be rewarded. So out of hate, they're doing something bad to someone else, causing them suffering, and believing wholeheartedly that they'll be rewarded. So they have faith. But obviously the faith is wrong. It's in the wrong thing. If you, out of hate, harm another person, you'll be punished for that, not rewarded. The same goes for teachers, saints, gurus. There are many, many spiritual teachers in the world today. But according to Gita and according to Vedas, the only one who can truly help you reach God is one who themselves have already reached God. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadechanti te jnanam jnaninas tattvadarshina. Gita says he has to be tattvadarshina. He has to have seen God himself, then he can help you find God. So let's say we're following someone. Maybe there are 100,000 or 1,000,000 people following this holy person. But this person is not God realized. Maybe they behave nicely in public and they're a good orator. They give nice speeches and they give some good quotations from the scriptures. But they themselves have not attained God. And the path they're teaching, well, how can it be right? If they themselves haven't attained God, how can the path they're teaching be right? Do they even know if it's right or not? They don't have the proof themselves if it's right. You get the proof when you reach God. That's when you know, yes, this was the right path. That's your ultimate proof. Let's say there's 1,000,000 people following this individual. Wholeheartedly, they have so much faith in him. So what will they get at the end of their life? They won't become God realized. They'll get the outcome of whatever they've done. So let's say it's just repeating a mantra, which is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It's a good action. But if they haven't surrendered their mind to God, they won't go to God. So they'll get some kind of result out of that, but not God realization. This is just an example. The saint we follow has to be correct as well. Just saying, oh, he's a holy person, have faith in him, God will grace you. No, you get what you have faith in. So let's say the person is giving nice, flowery speeches about God, but in his heart he only has ambition that people should follow me. I like when people call me Guruji. It makes me feel important. I want to have a big ashram, have some influence. It's very soothing to a person's vanity to have people follow them and look up to them and praise them. So spiritual people also fall victim to this kind of worldly desire. It's very enticing. It's very difficult to maintain humbleness if you have 1,000,000 people or 100,000 people following you. So what's in the person's heart? They're talking about God, but they've got worldly ambition in their heart the same as you do. So what are you going to get by having faith in that person? More worldliness. They may be talking about leelas of the Bhagavatam, but in their heart they have worldliness. You're getting worldliness. So the point of all of this is be careful. Have faith in the right thing. Educate yourself. Find out, what am I supposed... If this is a Guruji, so supposed to be a Guruji, find out from him, what am I supposed to get by following this path? Exactly. What are the markers along the way that I'm improving? So that I know, because I don't want to just wait until the ultimate attainment to know, oh good, it was the right path. I saw God, oh phew. I wasn't just wasting my time my whole life. No, there have to be some indicators along the way also of your progress. So a true saint is very clear. This is the goal. This is exactly what you're going to get. And these are the indicators along the way. And this is exactly what you have to do. And this is why. This is why it benefits you. And this is how you have to practice it. So then you can have some idea along the way that are you following the path correctly? Is it a correct path? Are you getting the right benefits that you've been told you're supposed to get? This is what Sri Krishna is indicating here in the 17th chapter when he says you get whatever you have faith in, so it better be the right thing. And he says there are three kinds of faith: sattvic faith, rajas faith, tamas faith. Obviously, having faith in the right thing, having faith in a divine saint who can actually take you to God, that would be sattvic faith. Having faith in a rajas individual would be rajas faith. Having faith in an evil person, even unknowingly, is called tamas faith. He goes on with some other interesting explanations here in this chapter when he says, Aharastvapi sarvasya trividho bhavati priya yagyashtapastathadanam tesham bhedamimam shrim. He says, in fact, food, yagya, tap, and dan are also classified as sattvic, rajas, and tamas. Ahar, food. What we eat also has a classification. So he says, eating healthy food that's good for your body and good for your mind, that's sattvic. Here he's not, there's only one small shlok for what is sattvic ahar. There's much, much more in the Vedas. So Krishna's just telling in brief. Of course, we know that sattvic food means vegetarian food, freshly prepared, not overspiced. Because in the next verse, when Krishna's talking about rajas food, he says, if it's too tikha, it's too hot, it's too drying, it's overcooked, it becomes rajas, even if it would have been sattvic. So the food, the vegetarian food, it should be healthy, fresh, not spoiled by the way we want it to taste, but preserving the good qualities of the food. So rice, dal, grains, nuts, fruits, vegetables, milk products, all of these are sattvic. Rajas food, again, is vegetarian, but deep fried, overspiced. Spice means chili. He said salt also. Salt is rajas. Make your food salty and it becomes rajas. Make your food too hot, too much chili, it becomes rajas. And tamas food is non-vegetarian. Meat, chicken, fish, eggs also come in this category. Here he doesn't name these things specifically. He says smelly things, rotten things. So think about it. Even if you just think about it from a visual perspective or a smell perspective. When you pick a vegetable, when you pick a fruit, when you harvest grain, does it smell bad? Is it shocking? Is it, as we say, gross? No. It doesn't smell bad. It doesn't look bad. When you kill an animal, it's shocking, disturbing, smells bad, looks bad. So use your common sense. Why would we eat food that comes from that kind of thing? If you leave a carrot sitting on the kitchen counter, even for 12 hours, is it going to rot? No. You leave some meat sitting on the kitchen counter and then eat that, you'll end up in the hospital. So, Krishna is just using these general characteristics of food, but what he's indicating is that sattvic food is vegetarian and non-vegetarian food is tamas. And when we say sattvic, rajas, or tamas, it means that it is also having that effect on our mind when we eat it. Yes, it's true. The act of killing an animal simply to eat it because we like the taste of that instead of eating vegetarian food, yes, that is considered a bad action. And there is punishment for doing any bad action, that kind of bad action included. So it is considered a bad action to eat meat. But apart from that, when we eat tamas food, food in that tamas category, it actually develops the tamas quality of the mind. It helps to develop that. When you eat sattvic food, it helps to develop the sattvic quality. Of course, it's not the only thing you have to do. You can't just eat sattvic food and then behave like a bad person in the world and think I'm becoming sattvic. You combine it with everything. You exercise, you take care of yourself, you treat others nicely, you do good actions in the world, you worship God and attach your mind to God, and eat sattvic food, then you'll be moving in that sattvic direction. Similarly, someone who eats tamas food may also do many good actions. It's just that he could even develop the sattvic quality of his mind more if he stopped eating tamas food and started eating more sattvic food. Alcohol and drugs also have a tamas effect on the mind. Then he goes on to talk about tap. Tap here doesn't necessarily mean like tapascharya, where you go to the jungle and don't eat food or drink anything and just sit in meditation. He doesn't refer to it in this way. Here tap means to put in effort to do something. And he says tap is of three kinds. Physical tap, what do you do with your body? Vachik tap, what do you do with your voice, with your words? And mansik tap, what do you do with your mind? So he says that the physical tap is, he mentions, paying respect to your elders, paying respect to your parents, paying respect to your gurujan. That is one form of physical tap. Talks about vachik tap. He says that controlling the use of your words, of your speaking, speaking carefully. He says that you should speak those words which do not inflame someone else. Speak those words which are hitkarak, meaning out of a desire to help someone else, to say something that will help them, even if it's something they don't want to hear. It doesn't mean that you just have to speak what everybody wants to hear all the time. But Shri Krishna is saying you shouldn't speak things just to insult someone else or make someone else feel badly. So controlling yourself in that way is vachik tap. And as well, trying to speak those words which will help another person. And speaking in a friendly and sweet way. And chanting God's name. He says, this is all part of vachik tap. Mansik tap is the effort we make to control our mind, to remain shant, to remain peaceful in all situations. Whether something bad has happened to us, just remain peaceful. Keep your mind in remembrance of God, deal with the situation. Something great happened to you, okay, again, don't get off kilter. Remain calm, keep your mind in God, deal with the situation. And that effort of remembering God, keeping your mind in remembrance of Radha Krishna, this is also mansik tap. Not allowing situations to bother you, this is mansik tap. Then he talks about yajna. Yajna is a Vedic ritual, described a fire ceremony where people, they do it as a good action. There are many such formalities described in the Vedas. So Shri Krishna says if someone's doing one of these religious formalities, just take it as any religious formality. If someone is doing such a religious formality with faith in God, and just knowing that this is prescribed by the Vedas, so it's a good action, so I want to do it, just for that reason. It's a good action, so I want to do it. not having any selfish desire affiliated with it, and then carefully trying to fulfill all the vidhi. In Vedas, when you practice any of these religious rituals, there are rules, do's and don'ts you're supposed to follow. So following all of that and wanting to do it to please God as a good action, that's called a sattvic yajna or a sattvic ritual. If someone does the same kind of thing, but they do it with a desire to get, oh, by doing this, I'll get to go to Swarg, or I'll get some kind of reward in my next life, then it becomes Rajas. And if someone performs the same kind of ritual without following any of the rules, not giving charity as part of it, not following the do's and don'ts, just does it carelessly, that's tamas. And that results in punishment instead of a reward. This, by the way, this part of Krishna's explanation has nothing to do with the path of bhakti. Bhakti is simply the surrender of your mind to God. There's no do's and don'ts for that. Just love Him and desire Him. This is just for people who want to accumulate some punya and get a better destiny or go to Swarga. Now regarding daan, this part relates directly to people nowadays. Nowadays yajna is not really followed in the world, it's too difficult. The do's and don'ts of the Vedas related to yajna are too hard to follow in Kaliyuga. So they're not even meant to be followed in Kaliyuga. Kali Yuga Yoga Na Yajna Na Jnana Ek Aadhar Ram Gunagana. Tulsidas ji says in Kali Yuga no one can follow the rules of Yajna or Yoga or Jnana Marg for that matter. The only recourse we have is to meditate on God and chant His name. Now regarding Daan, because as I was mentioning yesterday during the question and answer period, if we have more money than what we need for our own basic necessities, that extra that we have, that we generally use to enjoy this world, our scriptures actually say that that extra money should be used to help those who are less fortunate, who don't even have enough for their basic necessities. That's called daan. Charity. Daan means giving. Shri Krishna says, but there is sattvic daan, rajas daan, and tamas daan. Deshe kale cha patre cha taddanam sattvikam smritam. What is sattvic daan? He says, when you see someone who's in need, first of all, and they're the proper recipient for this. Proper recipient, he uses the word patre. They're patre. Let's say you give money to someone you think is going to use it for something good, and they use it for something bad. It means that person was not patre. Whether it's a person, an organization, whatever it may be, they tell you one thing and they do something else with it. You may think, oh, but my intention was good. You're not completely off the hook. Because that money you gave is now financing an illegal activity or something bad. So you are partly responsible for that. So we have to make sure the place we're giving it, it's actually going to be used for something good. Then, kale, it has to be given at the right time when it's needed. Deshe, at the right place when it's needed. And Shri Krishna says it should be given with respect and humbleness, not with a desire to receive any accolades because of our charity. Just because we know it's the right thing to do. That is sattvic daan. Rajas daan is the same thing if someone gives it to the right place, the right person, at the right time, it's used for something good, but they did it with a desire to be recognized or to be rewarded in some way. That's called Rajas Daan. It's obviously not as good as Sattvic Daan. And Tamas Daan is if someone gives it to the wrong person, it's used for the wrong thing, or they give it at the wrong time, in the wrong place, or they give it with lack of respect. meaning with like almost like durbhavana. They're not happy about doing it, they're just giving it like in a grumpy way, in a disrespectful way. Shri Krishna says that makes the what could have been sattvic dan into tamas dan, because you disrespected the very person that you're offering that charity to. So we understand that there are specific guidelines in our scriptures that have to be followed. A lot of people probably think, oh, just give the money, it's okay. No, we have to be careful. We're going to get the results of what that money is used for. So in the end, Shri Krishna says, faith is important, but you have to have faith in the right thing. And in the end, we have to have faith in God. And having faith in God means believing He exists, believing that He's real, and believing that we can attain Him. Why not? If He's real, if He exists, why shouldn't we be able to see Him? Why shouldn't we be able to experience Him? And if He's gracious, as all the saints and scriptures say that He is, then why wouldn't He make Himself known to us? And He does, through His scriptures. Why wouldn't He make Himself attainable to us? And He does, through the path of bhakti. And why wouldn't He come to us? And He will, when we surrender to Him. So we have to have faith in this. That is sattvic faith. That is correct faith. And if we have that faith, something else follows. Bhuk, desire. This shraddha, you could say, it also means desire. Because if you believe in God, you believe He exists, that He would come to you, that you could see Him, then why wouldn't you want? If we don't have that desire, it means we don't have the faith. Certainly, if you, let's say, you found out that you have, oh, I had a brother, and when my brother was born, he was given up for adoption, or he was given to this family to take care of, but I wasn't told, I didn't know about him. And now I found out about him, and it turns out he's living in the house across the street. Don't you want to go and meet him? Of course you will. You'll be so excited to go. So if you believe that God exists, and you're eternally His, He's eternally yours, you have that deep relationship with Him, of course you're going to have a desire to meet Him. If the desire is not there, it means our faith is not there. And without that faith, we'll be turned away from God and towards the world, and we'll continue to find miseries in this world because we keep looking for something that isn't there. We're looking for perfect love in the world, where nothing perfect exists. Perfect love is in God. Yet, we're looking for that over here. You know, some people say, but God is in everything, right? God is in my husband, my wife, my children. God is in the food I eat. God is in the TV I watch. God is in everything of this world. So if I'm enjoying the world, am I not surrendering to God? If I'm having faith in the happiness of this world, is that not the same thing as having faith in God? It doesn't work that way, because you see, our mind is not attached to God. Is God physically here? Yes. But we get the result of our attachment. So, you see, Meera drank the poison, right? But what did she get the result of? She got the result of drinking divine bliss. Because as she was drinking that, she was only thinking of Krishna. Her mind was 100% in Krishna, so she got the result of Krishna, not the result of the poison. If one of us drinks the poison, we'll be killed. So you get the result of that thing. See, God is, let's say you take some mud, or even some gobar, and you make a laddu out of that. And you think, I'm just going to believe that this is Rasgulla or Gulab Jamun. I like Gulab Jamun better than Rasgulla. And you eat that Gobar Gulla. Are you going to get the result of eating Rasgulla? No, absolutely not. It doesn't matter how much faith you have in it. You know why? Because Rasgulla is not omnipresent. But God is omnipresent. So whatever, you see, we have murtis in our mandirs. If you worship a stone murti, thinking it's a piece of stone, you'll get the result of worshipping a piece of stone, which is nothing. If you worship that piece of stone believing Krishna is in it, you're right, because He is. So you're, instead of attaching your mind to the stone, you're attaching your mind to Krishna, who's in the stone. But do we do that in the worldly things? No. When we're enjoying eating food, are we thinking, oh, Krishna's in this food? And as you're savoring every bite, you're thinking of Krishna? No. Your mind is just in the taste of the food. So it means your mind is attached in Maya, not in Krishna. When we love a person in this world, are we thinking every moment of the day that, oh, Krishna is in this person? I love Krishna who's permeating this person? No, we don't. We're just thinking about the person. So we can't hang on to that excuse that, well, Krishna, you're in this person's heart, and I love them, so I should get the result of loving you. No, your mind was attached to that person, so whether they're sattvic, rajas, or tamas, you'll get that result. Whereas if you attach your mind to God, in any way, attach your mind to God in the murti, in the food, in the person, wherever. If you attach your mind to God, you'll get the result of attaching the mind to something divine, which is God realization. So that's how it works. We really do have to make the effort to attach our mind to God. And that will only happen when we have a desire for God. And that desire is created through knowledge that we get from scriptures like the Gita. I told you in the very beginning of this series that although Gita is called Brahma Vidya Shastra, the knowledge of God, yet you don't know God by reading the Gita or learning the Gita. What Gita does is, if you understand the knowledge in the Gita, it develops a desire in you to know God, because it explains the true nature of this world. And it explains that God is bliss, and if you attain Him only, you can become truly blissful. So this kind of knowledge develops that desire to find God. Then you're ready to follow a path to God. If there's no desire to find God, then why would we put the effort in to follow any path? Thus, the knowledge of the Gita is very important, has to be carefully understood, and then it has to be applied in one's life. Generally, when a person develops this kind of longing for God, what Rup Goswami says is that Adau Shraddha Tatah Sadhu Sangotha Bhajanakriya. You develop the Shraddha, which means faith in God and a desire for God, then what? Sadhu Sangha. Krishna arranges for a true saint, a God-realized saint, to come into your life to guide you and show you the path. Then bhajana kriya. Then you start bhajan. Then you start true bhakti. So true bhakti starts after receiving the association of a true saint. You need a real guide, a divine guide, to show you the path of bhakti. Then you follow that path and get all the correct results. We have one chapter left in the Gita to cover. It's a very long chapter, the 18th chapter. So I'll share the highlights of that with you tomorrow, where Sri Krishna reveals the secret of the secrets to Arjuna. He tells him at the very end of the 18th chapter that now, Arjuna, I'm going to tell you sarva guhyatamam, the most hidden of all secrets I'm going to reveal to you. After he's already told him the entire Gita, he says, I have one more thing to tell you. So what is the philosophy in the 18th chapter, and what is that secret that Shri Krishna finishes the Gita with? You can come tomorrow to hear that. Boliye Vrindavan Bihari Lal Ki Jai.